You are listening to episode number 242 of the Reversing Diabetes with Delaine MD podcast. Welcome to Reversing Diabetes with Delaine MD, where women who are confused and worried about their type 2 diabetes come to learn strategies to fix it. I'm your host, Dr. Delaine Vaughn. Ladies, if you know you are capable of doing badass things at work and for your family, but you're frustrated with why you can't seem to stop eating the chocolate cake, this podcast is for you. Let's talk. Hey there, and welcome to the podcast. Thank you for taking time today and joining me and committing to your health for at least an hour, at least today. I'm sure you're doing it for more than that, but I appreciate that you are deciding to take this time and commit to yourself today. So today we are going to talk about intermittent fasting hacks. This month I've been talking about intermittent fasting, and today we're going to talk about hacks that can make it helpful or make it more easy, really, is what it comes down to. Helpful hacks that'll make it more easy. So intermittent fasting, if you've been trying intermittent fasting, you are probably aware that it involves some hunger. There are some things that you can do to make that easier. And then if you've done any amount of fasting, you probably understand that there are situations you find yourself in that are not fun or convenient, you know, whether they're awkward or uncomfortable. And we're going to talk about all of those things. And I'm not talking about physical discomfort. I'm talking about the discomfort of our brain. So I want to remind every woman out there who's interested in fasting to fix their type 2 diabetes, or in general, if they are interested in any kind of way to improve their health, have better blood sugars, fix their diabetes, improve their metabolic health, lose weight, whatever it is, I want to remind you that this should feel like a challenge. This should not feel like torture. It should not feel like physical pain. There's a difference between those two things. And I think that sometimes we coerce ourselves, or willpower, or self-discipline ourselves through experiences that are miserable and uncomfortable. And then we can't figure out why we don't keep doing it long-term. And I just want to encourage you that it's one thing to be challenged. We all like a good challenge. We love a good puzzle. We all like a, you know, mystery to solve. We all love those kinds of challenges. It should not feel like torture, though. It shouldn't feel painful. And so as I'm talking today about kind of these things to make fasting a little easier, to manage the hunger during fast, to manage the awkwardness of a restaurant experience with girlfriends while you're fasting, all of these experiences, I want you to remember, it should feel like a puzzle. It should feel like a challenge. It should not feel like torture or pain. Okay. So let's review fasting and how it works as a strategy to get better blood sugars. So fasting works to lower your insulin levels in your system, in your body, so that your cells can heal from their insulin resistance. If you've listened to this podcast at all, you know that I promote normalizing insulin resistance as the primary key to fixing your type 2 diabetes. It is not about lowering your blood sugars. It's about normalizing your insulin resistance, the way your cells respond to insulin when insulin is in the system. Okay. So let's talk about that for a little bit. Insulin resistance is when our cells are resistant to doing what they're supposed to do in the presence of insulin. When insulin is in the system, in the body, they don't function correctly. They are resistant to doing what they're supposed to do in the presence of insulin. When cells are functioning correctly, when they're not insulin resistant, when you're not diabetic, when you don't have metabolic disease, this is all similar terms, right? We call it insulin sensitive in the medical literature. When your cells are functioning correctly, all of those are terms for normally functioning cells, they will bind to insulin when it's in the system. And that insulin causes the cell to open up and move glucose from the outside of the cell to the inside of the cell, where the cell will burn the glucose as fuel. Okay. When we're insulin resistant, our cells don't do this. The glucose doesn't move inside of the cell. And the blood sugar, then the glucose outside of the cell, climbs quite high. And that's what we call diabetes. Insulin resistance is caused when your cells are exposed to too much insulin. They're overexposed for a long period of time to high concentrations of insulin. There is too much insulin in your system, in your body, and then your cells become resistant to that. Intermittent fasting helps to fix this by dropping your insulin level in your body and your system quite low, so your cells aren't overexposed to it and they can start responding normally. That reverses the resistance. Again, we call this being insulin sensitive. So I like to use the analogy of a sunburn whenever I'm talking about this, whenever I'm talking about, you know, this healing of our cells. The sun is not bad and insulin isn't bad. However, if it's your first day at the beach and you go outside and you're outside on the beach for 8 hours and you come back in the next morning, you'll likely wake up with red, uncomfortable skin. You've gotten a sunburn, okay? The answer to fixing the sunburn is not to get more sun. It's not to do anything that exposes you to more sun, right? And this is what medications do with insulin, right? Our medications try to squeeze our pancreas more to make our pancreas make more insulin so our cells get exposed to even higher amounts of insulin. And for the love of all that's holy, if you have been prescribed injectable insulin, that is exactly what's happening. We are making you more exposed to insulin. And that is like being sunburnt and being more exposed to the sun. You're never going to heal. Your skin is never going to heal and start functioning normally. Okay. So the answer to your sunburn situation for your first day at the beach, day number two, day number three, maybe day number four and day number five, you don't get into the sun. You stay out of the sun and you let your skin heal. And then after a while, that's unique to every situation, right? Like, how long do you have to stay out of the sun? A few days at least, sometimes longer, maybe a little less. You just have to see how healed your skin is, right? Once you have healed from the sunburn, you may get back into the sun and you won't be burnt or your skin won't be damaged in that moment. If you get out there too quickly, your skin is going to get re-damaged, you know, again. You're going to have to come back out of the sun for longer than you would have had you just stayed out of it for an extra day, right? It's the same thing with our cells. Your cells, the sun is not bad and insulin isn't bad, but when your cells are not functioning normally, you have to get them outside of the exposure of the insulin. You cannot have them exposed to insulin so that they can heal. How long does that take? I don't know. Depends. Depends on how your body is. Depends on how you respond to it. But if you keep trying to go back into the insulin, like I've been really good for 3 or 4 days, I think I'm going to have a donut. And you have a donut and you get this huge insulin response. It's like going out into the sun before your skin is entirely healed up. You're going to re-damage your cells and you're going to have to come back out and probably stay out longer. Okay. So intermittent fasting is a tool that lowers your insulin level in order to allow your cells to have that opportunity to heal. Okay. So today, most women who've tried this, there's a variety of different things. I've done two podcasts, the last two podcasts. So 241 and 240 have been over intermittent fasting. Check them out if you want to know what it is, how to do it, what regimens are, yada, 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 all of those things. But today I want to talk about hacks to make intermittent fasting a little easier. When you decide to use intermittent fasting as a tool, kind of like when you decide to use a hammer as a tool. When you use a hammer as a tool, chances are you should expect there's going to be some noises associated with that. You're going to have to tolerate the noises as you use that tool, the banging noise of the hammer, right? Intermittent fasting is a tool. And part of the agreement for using intermittent fasting as a tool is you're going to feel hunger occasionally. There is going to be some hunger associated with intermittent fasting. That's just part of using that tool, okay? So let's talk about some ways that we can maybe make that hunger easier and also some other things that come up with intermittent fasting. What we need to realize is that when we're using intermittent fasting to fix our type 2 diabetes, we have to pay attention to what breaks the fast. This is the phrase that they use when they're talking about intermittent fasting. What breaks the fast? And what that means is when I start fasting and I get my insulin levels really low, what are the things that I do that changes that, that brings me out of that fasting state? Clearly having a meal is part of that, right? But we want to avoid anything that increases your insulin level because that is what is going to quote unquote break the fast for somebody who is trying to use fasting to fix their blood sugars. Now other people you know, there's evidence and some scientists talk about other things breaking a fast. Like it's not having to do with the insulin. It's something else. But for the purpose of what we are using fasting for, to improve insulin resistance, insulin is the thing that you do not want to stimulate in order to keep from quote unquote breaking the fast. So breaking the fast in this context is anything that significantly increases your insulin level in your body or in your system. So that's the, we're going to try to figure out how to solve the puzzle of hunger, of awkwardness, of cooking a meal for our family. How do we do these things without breaking our fast? Women who are new to the fasting, or the fasting as a tool, find many aspects of this challenging. One, I'm hungry, but I don't get to eat food. That's one of their challenges. Two, it's time to eat. It's my lunch break, but no food for me. A third one, I'm cooking for the kids, but I don't get to eat. Another one they mention, I'm meeting my girlfriends out for dinner, but no food for me. These are challenges, obstacles we just have to learn to navigate as we're fasting. So some of the basic tips that I teach for managing fasting, managing the hunger primarily, is one, hydration. The hormone that is released in our body when we are thirsty is very binds in our hypothalamus to make us think we're hungry also, is really what ends up happening. So don't allow yourself to get thirsty. You are going to experience some element of hunger no matter what you do when you're fasting. Even for those of us who are scheduled, like we're, you know, we're seasoned fasters. We've fasted for years, right? I have fasted for years. Most days I fast somewhere around 18 hours. There was a long time where I fasted 22 hours a day, like 2 years. I fasted 22 hours a day and I just ate one meal, and it was a longer meal, a bigger meal, and I ate for about 2 hours. There have been times that I fasted 36 hours. I've fasted 48 hours. That's probably the longest I've ever really done. I don't, after that, I just don't feel like the trade-off there is very good for me, or is what I want to do is really what it comes down to. I've had clients who have fasted for 72 hours and even longer, okay? Like some of us have done this fasting thing a lot, and it doesn't matter. There's still going to be hunger associated with that. That's part of what we signed up for. Remember, if we're using a hammer, we're signing up for a lot of noise happening because we're using a tool that causes a lot of noise. If we're signing up for fasting as a tool, we're signing up for some hunger. So we probably need to figure out how to manage that. If you're not staying hydrated, you're intensifying that feeling of hunger. It's going to be there no matter. Why make it worse? Make sure you're hydrated. Drink plenty of water. In addition, the process of fasting does create an extra need for hydration. So make sure you're just drinking plenty of water. It also will take up real estate, which is a weird term, but it takes up space in your stomach so that you feel full longer. Drink water, guys. Like it's real straightforward. Make sure you're hydrating well. The second thing that I recommend frequently is bone broth. Bone broth can be many, many things. You can go to a butcher and buy a bone that is specifically made for bone broth. It's usually like a femur or some leg bone from some creature. You can go to a butcher and you can buy a broth bone and you can come home. There are recipes. You can look them up online for making bone broth. And basically what you're doing is you're boiling, you or whomever you buy bone broth from has soaked the bone in hot water, boiled it to the point where we extract the marrow. And there's just a lot of really good nutrients in that marrow. There's everything from collagen in the marrow. There are some other vitamins and minerals. There's fat in that. There's just a lot of good stuff in the marrow. And you're extracting that out when you make bone broth. So there's a lot of good stuff in the bone broth and none of it stimulates your insulin, which means you can have it while you're fasting and still keep your insulin levels really low and allow your cells to heal, okay? So you can get bone broth. You can make your own bone broth. You can buy it at most health food stores. You can get, although this is low quality bone broth, just so we're clear, the boxes of broth that we get at the store to make soup with or whatever, or vegetable stock or whatever those things are, those boxes of bone broth, you can use that. They are not going to stimulate your insulin. They are not chucked full of all of the nutrients, the collagen, the proteins, all the good stuff. There's vitamins, there's minerals, there's a lot of good stuff that's in bone broth, that's true bone broth. You're not going to get that in the box stuff that we buy at the store, but you can use that. Bone broth is, it will make you feel full. It's sort of a treat and it has a ton of minerals. There's a lot of, well, vitamins, minerals, protein, collagen, all sorts of really good things are chucked full in bone broth. So I would highly recommend that. Again, it staves off some hunger. Adding fat to your life is another thing that I highly promote with people when they're learning to fast. And even those, again, who are, you know, tried and true fasters, we've done it for a long time. What do I mean by adding fat? So some people add fat in a variety of different ways. You can add olive oil. We'll talk about what we're adding this to, because I think that's always the question. Wait, what do you want me to put this fat into? Olive oil is a way you can do it. Coconut oil is a way you can do it. There are concoctions you can buy that also are high fat. Butter is a way we can do it. These are the typical ways people do it. So what do I mean by adding fat? So you're looking for, ideally, you're looking for medium chain triglycerides. That is the fat that you're looking for. Coconut oil is chucked full of it. A lot of these concoctions that you will purchase are also chucked full of medium chain triglycerides. Those medium chain triglycerides readily pass into the brain, and the brain uses them as full fuel very easily. So they're a high quality fuel. They will make you feel more alert. And the fat binds to receptors in your stomach, like nerves in your stomach, that make you feel full and satiated. It makes you feel satisfied. So adding fat to what? We'll talk about. Adding fat to your fast, it does not stimulate insulin production and it keeps you feeling full and it gives you some energy. Recognize when I say it does not stimulate insulin production, there is a very minimal insulin stimulation with fat. You would have to have a lot of fat, probably an uncomfortable amount of fat, in order to stimulate enough insulin that it breaks your fast. Okay, so I just want to make sure that you're understanding that entirely. So, what do we add it to? So, people will add this to coffee, people will add this to tea. Okay, I do not do either of those things, but I know a lot of people do and they like it. It's similar to adding like heavy whipping cream, and you can add heavy whipping cream, although there is sugar associated with both butter and heavy whipping cream. There's lactose sugar, and that can, if you get too much of it, you can definitely knock yourself out of a fast. So that's why I'm not talking about it so much here, but instead these really like more pure oil-based fats. You can add the medium chain triglyceride oils that you get from, I mean, they're commercially available concoctions. You can add coconut oil. Again, you can add it to your coffee. You can add it to your tea. I don't do any of that. I've tried that. It does not. It takes away from my coffee experience. So I don't do that. But what I do, in fact, do is that I take bone broth. And because I don't eat beef bone broth because I have an allergy to beef and mammalian meat. So I get chicken broth and I do get it in the cheap, crappy boxes from the store. And then I just add medium chain triglyceride oils to that. So either olive oil, which is not as high in that medium chain triglyceride as either coconut oil or some of the other concoctions, the commercially purchased stuff is. But I add the oil to the cheap box of chicken broth. And usually I'll add a little salt and pepper on top of it and maybe a little oregano. And that's what I'll drink if I'm trying to get a fast to last longer. And I want to enjoy that. I usually do that in the winter because I really enjoy it. It's just a nice, it's a treat. So some people do add it to coffees and they do great with it. Some people add it to teas and they love it. I don't enjoy either of those. So what I do is I add it to a bone broth. But any way that you can get fat into your diet, It is very unlikely you're going to get a huge insulin surge with that. So you do not break your fast, but instead you get satisfied, right? Like you create the feeling of satisfaction, the binding in the nerves in the stomach that tell your brain, hey, we've got stuff down here. No need to hunt and gather. All is well. We got this. So you get some satiation in your stomach, which is nice. In addition, these medium chain triglyceride oils, also these fats, they cross the blood-brain barrier and they give your brain some fuel. So add fat, right? Make sure you're hydrated, try bone broth for the collagen and the proteins, and then add some fat to your life. That will make you feel satiated. It makes your fast a little easier. The other thing I recommend, and I cannot stress enough, make sure you're getting adequate sleep. Get enough sleep. Ladies, if you are not getting enough sleep and you're fatigued, you are going to trigger more hunger signals. It's just the way it works. There's study after study that supports this. Over and over, same findings. Poor sleep leads to increased hunger. And nobody's hungry for celery sticks when they're exhausted. They're like, I want some Oreos and some French fries together, right? That is the choice that we make when we're exhausted. So make sure you're getting sleep if you're doing a fast. Make it easier on yourself, okay? Also, you're doing something new. If you're a newbie to fasting, you are trying a new skill. You are trying to learn a new skill. It is so much more uncomfortable to learn a new skill when you are exhausted. Throw yourself a bone, give yourself a softball here, and get some sleep. Make sure you're getting adequate sleep when you're fasting. So those are just some tips to making the hunger easier, the fasting easier, just in general to ease that. But most women find that they come up with other things that are also frustrating for them. It's time to eat and I don't get to eat is a big one, right? It's lunchtime. All my friends are going out to eat and I don't get to eat. So what am I going to do? I'm twiddling my thumbs. What am I going to do with this, you know, half an hour, 45 minute, hour long lunch break that I have? I loved when I realized what my options were here. Most women find we have a long list of things that go on the I don't have enough time to do this list. But we spend tons of time hunting and gathering, i.e. prepping food, cooking food, and cleaning up from food that we may or may not need, that also may be like we're making food and we're eating food in a way that's making us sick, but we don't have time to do 100 other things that are really important to us that we would love to do. A fast gives you some of that time back. So start thinking about what do you want to accomplish with that extra time? Do you want to go on a walk? Because you know you don't have enough time to exercise. Do you want to go on a walk? Do you want to read a book? Do you want to call a friend that you haven't spoken to in months? Do you want to plan for something? Maybe your meals for the rest of the week. Do you want to do some shopping that you haven't had a chance? You know, you got to go grocery shopping, but you don't have time. You got to run to that one store where you got to pick up two things and don't have time to get out there. Well, you've got an hour now back that you didn't have before, or 30 minutes back that you didn't have before. Do you want to give yourself, you know, some benefit for prepping for the next day? Do you want to do some of the things that you need to do before you go to bed so you can get in bed earlier, right? Fasting opens up time that you used to spend eating foods that made you sick. It opens up time for you to do 100 other things that you quote unquote didn't have time for before. I love this about fasting. And I highly encourage you to look at that list of things I would have done. I would do this if I had more time. Maybe it's learn another language. I mean, there's 100 things that can go on this list, but start to consider what you would do with more time, because we all have used that excuse, and then start doing those things during that fasting time, that time where it's time to eat, but I don't get to eat, okay? Mealtime with the family is another place, right? It's time to make dinner for your family, and it's not time for you to eat though. And I actually find this is just a normal for my experience, and it's not everybody needs to do it this way. This is not why I share stories, my personal stories, because you need to do it the way I do it. That is not what I'm trying to say here. I'm trying to offer that there can be some different approaches here. I don't find that cooking component, like I have a different thought about cooking for my family when it's not time for me to eat than women who are like, I don't want to cook for my family if I don't get to eat. I don't want to spend the energy if I don't get to enjoy it. Okay. I don't enjoy eating that late in the day. I try not to eat after about 6 p.m. And even if I'm eating between like 5 and 6, it's probably too late for me. It just does not set well in my tummy. I don't like that feeling in my tummy. So I don't enjoy that. But a lot of times my kids aren't getting home until 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock at night, and they've got to eat. And lots of times women don't want to spend the energy for them to cook if they're not going to enjoy that food. Or we don't, most of the times that we don't want to sit there and watch somebody else eat while we suffer through not eating. That's a component of looking at why are we doing this not eating thing? Like we have to do some coaching, some self-coaching around that. When I tell myself that I'm not eating and they get to eat, how do I feel in my body? Typically, you're going to feel pretty dumpy, like you're going to feel jaded or whatever that might be. And then your actions are to stew, are to ruminate on how it's unfair. And usually we break and eat in that moment, okay? Because we are grown-ass women and we don't want to live a life that's quote-unquote unfair. And that makes tons of sense, tons of sense. So getting a different thought about that is probably helpful. So I'm going to share some of my thoughts with you in that situation. And try these on and see what fits. You're probably going to have both thoughts. Even if the new thought that I share with you makes sense, you're going to have both the old thought and the new thought in your brain at the same time. Nothing's wrong. Nothing's broken. That's how it works. But see how you feel with the new thought versus how you feel with the old thought, and then decide where you want to spend more time. The old thought feels dumpy. Maybe we don't spend so much time there. If the new thought feels a little more liberated, a little more spacious, maybe we try to spend more time there. So for me, when my kids are eating and it's not time for me to eat, I usually make food I'm just not interested in. There is no alternate universe where I'm excited about eating hot dogs. There's no alternate universe where I'm super excited about mac and cheese. There's no alternate universe where I'm excited about SpaghettiOs. I don't like to eat a ton of flour, so I'm not interested in spaghetti in general, okay? I don't like to eat late, so I'm not going to eat like a big, huge meatball sub. So these are things that I make for my kids whenever it's not my time to eat. I usually will make them pasta with meatballs. I don't eat the pasta. I'm just not interested. And usually the meatballs are made out of beef and pork, and I can't eat those either. I'll make them bratwursts for the same reason. I'll make them hamburgers. I can't eat them. And so it's just something I make for them when I know I'm not going to eat with them. Because I'm never going to eat the hamburgers. They make me, I have an allergic reaction to them, right? Find something that you're not interested in, right? I get that you may not have an allergy to a food that kind of keeps it off your option list. That's fine. Find something that your kids love, because kids love the most crazy plebeian food ever, and make it for them. You're not even interested in it. That's half the battle, okay? In my brain, like the less appealing it is to me, the better. So if this doesn't feel right to you, you're like, no. I don't have food in my house that I'm not interested in, and I'm not feeding my kids some crappy plebeian food. Good for you. That makes tons of sense. So if that option does not feel right for you, kill two birds with one stone. Make food for your kids that's high quality food that you are interested in, and prep your lunch for tomorrow. Kill two birds with one stone. This makes it easier. This saves you some time, right? Maybe you're not going to eat the chicken and the asparagus and the lovely salad that you just made for them for dinner, but you can put it together in separate dishes and have it nicely ready for you to eat it for lunch tomorrow, okay? You can make an extra meal, right? Like if you're making chicken, or if you're making hamburger patties and the kids are having hamburger and you want to have a hamburger patty, like make extra. I mean, like you can't go wrong with more meat, like more chicken, more hamburger patties, throw them in the fridge, then they're available, easy for you to grab when it is time for you to eat, okay? Figure out how to kill two birds with one stone. How can you make your meal so that it's ready for you, so you're not just cooking for no reason? And then how can you also feed your family when it's time for them to eat, but not time for you to eat? The other thing that I find fun to do in these situations is to let my kids cook. Like, oh, this is a time for you to learn how to cook. And then if you ruin it, you can eat it. I ain't gotta eat, right? Or I don't have to worry about it. It also helps your kids kind of learn. Like I don't like just let my kids make whatever. Like they're not making Dorito encrusted mac and cheese or some ridiculous kind of food. we decide like, oh, this is healthy. This is something your body needs. You need protein and you enjoy these things. Let's learn how to make those things together. It can be a time for you to really bond and connect with your kids. I think it's fun. So let's talk lastly about navigating how to eat out, because this is something that we all come up with. I do this again, like when I'm going out to eat with my girlfriends, they aren't off at 2:30 in the afternoon so we can go eat before Delaine stops eating. Like, that's not a reality. So if I'm not eating late and we're not going out to dinner, I'm not meeting up with them until 6 p.m., I have to figure out some way to navigate that. And what that looks like for me is that I usually will get fizzy water. Sometimes I will get a glass of wine and I will sip on a glass of wine. I usually do not finish the glass of wine anymore. There was a time where I did. I don't usually do that because it usually ends up giving me a headache and I don't feel very good. So I'll sip on a glass of wine or I'll have fizzy water. And then what I do is I order food to bring home to my kids. There's a restaurant in town. They make churros. My kids love the churros. I'll get a glass of wine or a glass of fizzy water. I'll sit with my friends. We'll chat. We'll catch up. And I'll order an order of churros to go and I bring them home to my kids. Or I'll bring them home fries or cheese sticks or whatever it is that they want. Some other options. I'll order my lunch for the next day. I'll look at the menu and I'll be like, I love that salad. I'm going to go ahead and order that, but I want to order it before I leave and I want to order it to go. And then my dinner, my lunch for the next day is ready to roll. I don't need to think about it. I don't need to mess with it. And I still get to enjoy the food from that restaurant. So the other thing, think of things that are on the menu. A last option is thinking of things that are on the menu that you know you'll use later. So soups are a really great one for this. Like, you know, I don't know anything on this menu. I don't have a favorite salad, but that soup looks interesting. I'll go ahead and order that soup and then I will have it, you know, with my meal tomorrow. I'll try it out and see how it goes. If I don't love it, awesome. Usually soups are, you know, not horribly expensive. Great way to do it. So those are some hacks for navigating eating out. Okay. That's what I have for you for making fasting easier for yourself. I do have a webinar on this nights out, this eating out business, a webinar on March 20th. And you can sign up for that webinar, www.delainemd.com/March, M-A-R-C-H, 20. That will allow you to register for that webinar. You can get registered, and then you will also get reminders for the webinar and when it's coming up. So go there. We are going to be talking about how to have better blood sugars, even on nights out. I'm going to be talking about all the hacks to get you through that. So you can enjoy date nights with your spouse, nights out with the girls, whatever that looks like. You can enjoy, you know, travel days, right? Like, this is a big thing. Like, I'm going on a road trip. What am I going to do on a road trip? What do I get that serves my blood sugars on a road trip? We're going to talk about all of those things. I do want to remind everybody, if you are medicated for your type 2 diabetes, please be careful initiating a fasting regimen or any of the dietary changes that I recommend in this podcast. You have been medicated for the way you have eaten in the past, and if you change the way you eat, you are going to need to change your medications, and if you don't, you can get very sick, the kind of sick that involves death. So don't do that. I want you to call the provider that gave you these meds, and I want you to get a clear line of communication, how they want you to share your blood sugars with them and how they intend to share feedback with you about what you need to do differently with your medications. If you don't do this, you can end up very, very sick. So I need to insist that you do that if you were medicated for type 2 diabetes. Lastly, well, there are a couple things. If you haven't already signed up, there's a 14 days to better blood sugar program. It's a guide. You can get that at delainemd.com/better, B-E-T-T-E-R. It's 14 days. Very powerful. Again, if you're medicated, be very careful with this. I had a woman send me a message. She used it for 14 days. She lost 16 pounds. Her blood sugars were around 100 for the first time ever. I had another woman tell me the same thing. Like, I used it on day number 9. I finally saw my sugars for the first time drop below 100. It's very, very, very powerful. Be very careful while you're using it, but check it out because you can have better blood sugars. It's really much easier than you might think. As always, if you have any questions, you can send me an email, delaine@delainemd.com. And then I would like to ask, if you are enjoying this podcast, if you're finding the tools that I teach in this podcast helpful, please rate the podcast on your podcast player. The more ratings and reviews that people give this podcast, the more people the podcast will be presented to. Everybody needs to know that they can live a naturally healthy life. 9 out of 10 Americans are plagued with insulin resistance, even when they don't know it. And what that leads to is high blood sugars and diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, dementia. And what did the medical system? The medical system will just take meds and give meds for that. I want people to know that there is a way to live our life where we don't need to be sick and don't need to be tied to the healthcare system. The more ratings and reviews this podcast gets, the more people will hear about this. So lastly, I want to remind you to keep listening, keep avoiding foods that are making you sick, and keep making choices in favor of your health and your vitality and your longevity. If you have any questions, holler at me. I'll be back next week. Bye-bye.